This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 238.
We're here once again to bring you another episode of the show. We are super excited. Once again, as always, we are like contractually obligated to be super excited, I think.
Maybe.
To be here. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my amazing wife, the most wonderful woman in the world, Anitra.
I can't say that's me to that the most wonderful woman in the world.
I'm here with my wife, Anitra.
That's me.
All right, here we go.
And I have a fact this week.
All right, let's do it. Welcome, by the way, to everyone.
You said you didn't want to visit uranium again, and 238 was a really good time to do that.
It's a pretty good time to do that, yeah.
However, I found something else.
Okay.
238 is a really cool looking number in a couple of other bases.
What's a base?
Okay.
Like acids and bases?
No, not like acids and bases. Different
like
ways
ace of base?
Different ways of counting. Particularly, it's a really cool looking number in binary and in hexadecimal.
Okay.
So in binary, the number 238 is 1110 1110.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of cool. And in hexadecimal, which is base 16, it's represented as EE.
EE!
Yeah, so I thought it was really cool.
I mean, that makes sense that you would have two quartets of binary digits that match, and then the two letters in base 16 would also match.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, as it so happens, the Family Gamers Podcast is generously sponsored by First Move Financial. Did you know the best time to start planning for your holiday spending is right now? A lot of people got stimulus checks this week, or they're coming very soon. Right now is a really good time to potentially put some of that away for future expenses.
But we just got out of the holiday season. It's March.
I know. So the question is, why should we start planning for next year now?
Well, because one common budget killer is, quote, one-time, unquote, expenses that creep up on us even though we should know they're coming.
Wait, so you're saying there's going to be a Christmas this year?
There will, in fact, be a Christmas this year, or winter holiday of your choice. An easy way to make sure that your bank account isn't crying in January is to look at how much you spent on your various holiday spending last year, divide that number by 12, and then start putting away that much money every month as part of your regular budget.
As a bonus, when all those Christmas in July sales start popping up, you've already got money set aside for buying gifts. So we do this with Christmas. We also do it with things like clothes for the kids. We allocate a number at the beginning of the year, and we tap into that budget over the course of the year. So if there's a sale, we have already set a money aside to take advantage of it. To schedule time to talk to First Move Financial about other ways to take control of your finances, head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up an initial 15-minute call.
Thanks again to First Move Financial for sponsoring the Family Gamers Podcast.
So this morning, you posted on Facebook a picture of our six-year-old sitting on the couch for half an hour reading.
Reading quietly by himself with nobody else.
It was amazing.
My mind is blown.
And we have been super excited about him reading because it allows him to play a lot more board games than he used to be able to, because a lot of board games require reading.
But a lot of board games don't require reading.
And that exactly is going to be our topic this week. No reading, no problem. We're going to share some of our favorite games and some of the community's favorite games that don't require reading. You may be surprised when you find out just how many of these there are.
They're not all kid games either.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So we're going to get into that in the second half of the show. First half of the show, as always, we're going to talk about what we've been playing. Okay, you're going to go first. I'm just going to say this up front. I am extremely jealous of you.
So right around the end of last week, I pulled out Pebble Rock Delivery Service, which you have been desperately waiting to play, and I got to play it.
That is true. And we're going to have James Hudson from Skybound Games / Druid City Games on the show very soon.
So you definitely want to play it before that.
Yes, that's true.
It was a lot of fun, but I think it's going to be even more fun playing with the whole family. Like, it was fine with two players. I think it's going to be better.
All right. Awesome.
So Pebble Rock Delivery Service is a pickup and deliver game, and the board is huge.
Really big. Like,
really big. And it looks like there's a lot of moving pieces there, but it was surprisingly easy to get into, really family friendly. I mean, I was playing it with our heavy gamer 10-year-old, but I don't think our 6-year-old is going to have any problems with this at all. It's really neat, and it really simplifies that pick up and deliver idea down to kind of its bare bones with a really fun theme of going around and island hopping and delivering crates to specific locations that are drawn out from the deck randomly.
Cool. And the next one on the list, this is a game that we have both been playing and the kids have been playing a lot of. And this is something we recently got in from Haba. This is Snail Sprint. This is the cutest game ever.
Yeah, this is a racing game where you're rolling dice and moving snails along a track. So far, so good. The main mechanic is that you roll two dice and then you pick one is going to be the snail that you move and the other one is going to be where they move to. So you've almost always got a choice unless you roll doubles.
So the dice have colors on them and the snails are all different colors and those same colors are on the path. So if you roll a red and a yellow on the two dice, you can either move the red snail to the next yellow spot in front of it or the yellow snail to the next red spot in front of it.
It's really neat. There's some blocking mechanics so you can occasionally get mean if you really want to. But the other two key things, one is that it uses the metal tin as part of the game. The track goes up and around it, and
it's so great.
The snails are magnetic, so you stick them to the tin as they go around, which also means that the track changes a little bit game to game, which is cool.
Yep.
The other major factor here is that nobody knows what snails each person wants to win. You have a hidden card with three snails on it. If any of those snails make it to the podium, then you're going to get points for those snails. So obviously, the more snails that you get on there, the better. But a person who manages to get one of their snails to the first place spot is going to be equal with a person who got two snails to spots two and three.
We really like this game. The kids have been just playing it a ton. So very, very glad to have Snail Sprint in from Haba.
The game schooling continues with more Ion, a compound building game, and Periodic, a game of the elements, both from Genius Games. With Ion, since we're pretty much always playing it at two players, I decided this week to experiment with a different style of drafting, because a two-player drafting game can get a little boring. So I tried the kind of drafting that is done in Seven Wonders Duel, with setting out a pyramid of cards, and you can only pick cards that are not covered when it's your turn. It definitely made it a little bit more interesting, and there was definitely a race for specific cards. Didn't work out quite as well as I had hoped, but I'm glad that we tried it. That's been really helpful to just get things moving and like, oh, these things attach because of the way ionic bonds are formed. Periodic has actually probably been more helpful because I'm just trying to get our fourth grader, our 10-year-old, familiar with the periodic table. Periodic has been great for that because you're literally moving your pieces around on the periodic table and collecting combinations of elements. If you are looking at using this as an educational game in your own home, be aware there are no actinides or lanthanides. Those two periods that are kind of pulled out from the main table do not appear in this game at all.
Cool. A couple days ago, we pulled our oldest Claire in because she is the biggest reader in the family next to you to play a game of Athenium, Mystic Library from Renegade. We've talked about this game before. This is a spatial relations game where you are playing as a student who is helping the librarian shelve the books. Essentially.
Yeah, it's also got a drafting mechanic in that you are looking at a hand of cards and you pick one card to play. Everyone plays simultaneously, but every card has three sections on it. So there's a bottom section, which is going to apply to the person who played it, but then there's also a left and a right section, which will apply to the players on either side.
I really like this game a lot. It just appeals to me. The books all have silly names, kind of like Ex Libris.
I love the books.
It's very similar to Ex Libris in that regard. I wouldn't be surprised if Renegade decided to say they were in the same world kind of thing. You know what I mean? It is a small table presence game, which seems to be not the norm these days. especially for a game with boards and sideboards, and it still manages to only take up like half our table or less, which is nice.
Yes.
It moves relatively quickly, and there's a lot of opportunity to make decisions.
Yes. This is definitely a meatier family game.
Yeah, it's definitely still a family weight game. It's yes. not complex, but there's a lot of decision making that you can engage in if you want to. Yes. And I like that a lot. A hefty component of this game is also the reshelve actions, which allows you to move the books that you've already put on your shelves around. I like this because it represents changing goals, because more goal cards come out, which is nice, or it allows you to fix a mistake that you might have made for some other reason. These are really nice things in a game like this, because sometimes you commit to something and then you realize that it's not the best thing to do. And the reshelve actions allow you to move some stuff around to accommodate for that. And I really like that.
Yeah, I like that too. All right, so I think the last two games on our list are ones that you played and I didn't.
That's true. So we played another session of Pandemic Legacy Season 0. We finally lost a month. We lost in March, and then we came back and we won in March.
Okay, good.
So we got a third of the way through the deck, and we were through four or five of the escalation cards. They're epidemic. They're not epidemic cards in this game, but those cards.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was just too much all at once. And
yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. We lost so quickly. I think we started playing at like 7:45. We had lost before 8:30.
Wow.
Yeah. So then we set it back up and then we played it again. Well, and then
good motivation to play again right away.
Yeah. 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 And then we played Fleet the Dice game.
Yay, Fleet the Dice game.
And I love it. I actually used your strategy, which is all of the coins.
Coins.
And more I won.
I'm telling you, man, the coins are where it's at.
Well, I ended up not doing the buildings. I did lots of coins and then lots of fish.
Yep.
So I ended up with like 70 fish and 100 coins.
Yep.
And that was pretty much all I needed.
That's pretty much what I go for. I'm like, I'm only going to build a building if I can't do anything else.
And well, so you know what is interesting, and not to get too deep into, you know, Fleet the Dice game strategy, but almost at the beginning of the game, I bought the smokehouse, which gives you 2 extra coins when you go to market.
All right, that's helpful.
Yeah. And yeah, it's 2 like fill-in boxes to get to it, but as soon as you start going to market, at the beginning of the game, you're getting 50% more coins.
Yeah, everybody else is getting 2 coins and you're getting like 4.
Yeah.
And if you ramp up the fish quickly,
well, that's 100% more coins.
You're getting 5 or 6 when everybody's
and it goes
only
up
getting 2 or 3.
Pretty quickly. Yeah. So the smokehouse actually proved to be a very valuable tool for me.
Sure.
So, yeah. So that was Pandemic Legacy Season 0 and Fleet the Dice game.
All right. Cool. Well, we are going to take a break. We're going to listen to an awesome Snap review from Nick and Izzy.
Nick and Izzy are back. They're hilarious.
Full of attitude, as usual.
Mm, as usual. I'm sure that Nick would say that Izzy's attitude is not as funny and adorable as we think it is.
You know, that's how parents work. And when we come back, we are going to talk about no reading, no prop.
All right. We'll be right back.
Captain, the crew has finished swabbing the deck and shining up all these cannons. The sea is pretty calm right now, so what are we gonna do?
Arr, let me ponder that one for a moment. Ah, I have an idea. How about we play a round of Bluffineer dice game? Go down to ye quarters and grab your gold and let's play!
This is a Snap review for Bluffineer dice game.
Bluffineer Dice Game was published by Big G Creative and was cleverly created by 2 master Bluffineers, Ken Grawl and Jeremy Posner. It plays 3 to 6 players, I mean pirates, ages 10 and up. How about the game's art?
The art is phenomenal. The coins are so shiny, they show rainbow color. Like, who doesn't want rainbow colored coins?
Yeah, they're super shiny. They have some kind of like gold foil finish to them, so when you do kind of hold them in your hands and turn them, like the light actually changes the color of the coins. They're really cool. They really do a good job of simulating real like real life coins.
Yeah,
I think
it creates a rainbow.
Yeah,
like rainbow.
Yeah, it's really cool. It has a lot of shelf presence. Definitely, it'll jump off the shelf when you're looking at it at the store. But some of the other components for the artwork, I mean, the treasure map looks great. Everything is easy to read.
The symbols really make sense with the game.
Yeah, so these symbols, there's treasure chests, sabers, pirate ships, and even the Jolly Roger skulls. But yeah, again, everything, the iconography looks great. Everything is carried across and all the components. The cards are really tiny. They're small, so they're easy for kid hands to hold and adults too. The bone dice themselves actually have those same icons on it, so everything is really easily identifiable.
So how do we play?
Bluffoneer is simple to play and easy to teach. Players will start out with 10 gold coins and a card that they keep hidden from all their opponents. To kick things off, the first player will roll the bone dice. If you roll doubles, then refer to the treasure map to take an action. So, Captain, what are the different actions that treasure map has?
So if you roll 2 treasure chests, all players give 1 gold coin to you. If you get 2 sabers, steal 2 gold coins from any player. And if you get 2 pirate ships, steal 3 gold coins from another player. And then if you get 2 Jolly Roger skulls, give all players 1 gold coin.
If you don't roll doubles, there are 2 other possible actions. If the icons on the bone dice match your card, you're going to reveal that card right away, show that they match, and then all other players will toss 1 gold coin back into the box.
Ha ha! Take that, you scallywags!
Now, if your card doesn't match what's on the bone dice, just shake your head and let the bluffing begin. So this is when other players can claim that they have a match and shout,
"Gimme your booty!"
But they don't reveal their card yet. So then we go around the table, and if somebody thinks they're telling the truth, then that player can give the bluffer 1 gold coin. That player then immediately has to reveal their card, and they get to keep the coin regardless if they were bluffing or not. On the other side of the coin, if you think that pirate was bluffing, yell,
"Bluffoneer!"
And they must reveal their card. If they were telling the truth this time, and the card matches the bone dice, you have to pay them 2 gold because you were wrong. If they were telling a tall tale, and you caught that scoundrel in their lie, they must pay you a gold coin. And then, to kind of clean things up, anytime a card is revealed, it just gets discarded to a discard pile, and then that player draws a new card, and again, keeps it hidden from prying eyes. And you and your fellow pirates continue rolling the bones and bluffing until one unlucky pirate loses all their coins, and then the game ends. Player with the most coins is the winner. So, Izzy, what did you expect from Bluffoneer Dice Game?
I definitely thought it was going to be more of a dice game, less than a bluffing game. Because there's dice in the name.
But yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. I figured there'd be some type of dice rolling in the game, but I wasn't sure how bluffing would be involved. At first glance, I immediately thought of Liar's Dice, but this game totally didn't play like that at all, which is a good thing. So what surprised us about Bluffoneer Dice?
It brings out the pirate in anyone. That alone led to plenty of giggles and everyone getting into character. I definitely like the bluffing aspect.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The bluffing part's pretty fun.
I liked when rolling doubles, something actually happened. It could be good, it could be bad, you could lose all your gold.
Yeah, I definitely like stealing 2 gold from other players, and it's awesome that you can actually pick the player that you're stealing them from. Although, you have to be a little careful on who you're trying to run out of the game as fast, because if you don't have enough coins to win, you may want to target another player to make sure that you have the most gold when somebody else goes out. So how about the dice they included in this game?
They are crazy cool.
Why is that?
They look like bones! Who's got a board game that has dice that look like bones?
Yeah, they're physically shaped like bones. You hold them in your hands, they actually look like a pair of bones that you'd see on like the Jolly Roger pirate flag. And when you roll them, it just feels really cool when you actually roll them. I don't like to kind of just toss them and shake them. I like to kind of cup them up my hand and kind of do this kind of thing. Rub my hands together like I'm trying to keep my hands warm and then just launch them and then just watch them fly and bounce across the table. So it's just really cool. It's very thematic. I feel like I'm on a pirate ship rolling some bones, literally.
Box says 10 and up, but this game is way too easy to play 10 and up. My 7-year-old brother could play it. He won on his own. Nobody on his team. He did the work.
And I also think it's great for grandparents, too. So brought it over to a family game night. We taught your grandparents, and we were up and running really fast, and we had a blast playing. So, Izzy, what player count did you most enjoy Bluffoneer Dice at?
6, because it is so much more eventful. People are picking on people, trying to get people out, and there's so much more action than when you play, an example, like 3 players.
Yeah, there's a lot more interactivity. I completely agree with you. I think the more the merrier in this case. This would be great for like parties and stuff like that when you can do that. So who do you think would enjoy this style of game?
Definitely people who love bluffing. Oh, and this would make a great gift for anybody who loves anything pirate-related.
Bluffing Your Dice Game is a great little filler game, and it only lasts about 10 to 15 minutes. It would be great for kicking off a game night or when you're looking for something short to play. And it's totally worth the $9.99 price point. So how do we rate Bluffing Your Dice Game?
4 out of 5 tattered Jolly Roger flags. And that's Bluffing Your Dice Game in a snap!
And we're back! We are here and we are going to talk about games that do not require reading. But first, let's welcome the newest members of the Family Gamers community on Facebook.
Yes, we would like to welcome Troy Williams and David Cooper. Thank you so much for joining the community. Hope you're having some fun in there. Hope you are finding like-minded people who can help you with the game's questions that you may have.
So let's talk about reading. Reading is great. Reading is fun. Yes. We want to encourage reading.
Yes, we do.
However, there are reasons to explicitly choose games some of the time that don't require reading.
Before we get into the actual games part of this, let's talk about that, because one of those things is pretty obvious, and that is you want to play games with people who can't read.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a part of our lives for the last 12 years.
Fortunately, it's over. Woo!
Yeah, seeing as our youngest was reading a chapter book today, I think we are done with that portion of our lives.
Yes.
However, that is not the only reason to explicitly
play. But it's a major one, and it's a legitimate one, and it's totally fine.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the people in the Family Gamers community, listeners, readers, whatever, are dealing with this exact issue. There are family members who can't read.
And when it comes to little kids who can't read yet, or who struggle at reading, I would much rather bring them in with a game that doesn't immediately penalize them, make them be on somebody else's team, make somebody else read the cards for them.
Right. And so you said something there that really gets into another one of these things, which is struggling with reading. When you read, you use a different part of your brain than when you solve problems.
Yeah, so there's at least 3 parts of your brain that you use when reading. One of those is actually the visual processing, you know, seeing what's on the page. But you also use something called the temporoparietal cortex and the inferior frontal cortex. Both of those are used in the phonological processing, that is, turning the written word into sounds in your head.
You sound very smart when you say stuff like that.
I looked this part up. But it's true. It uses a different part of your brain, and you have to think and switch tasks in your brain between, this is the thing I want to do, here's the thing I need to read, to figure out if that's the thing I want to do.
So what that essentially means is the process of playing a game that requires reading can become a much more laborious task for someone who isn't really good at reading. Even if they can read and they're competent enough at doing it, it's an extra piece of effort. And that might make a game less enjoyable for someone.
I mean, personally, I love to read, but still some of my favorite kind of chill out games that don't make me think too hard are ones that don't require reading for exactly that reason. All right, back to a fairly obvious one. If you're playing a game that doesn't require reading, there's no longer a language barrier. If you're in a multilingual house or you're dealing with somebody else who maybe reads but doesn't read your language,
right. You
want to look for games that you can play with those people and enjoy spending time with them. The same thing also goes for grandparents or anybody who has visual processing issues, as simple as nearsightedness, but can be more complex than that. Written text is usually the smallest visual element in a board game. So if you're going to have trouble focusing on anything, it's going to be that.
And the truth is, the best lit places are usually outside. And although we have absolutely taken time out to take a look at games that work well outside, most games don't work outside. And so you're playing at a dining room table or you're playing at some kind of table and you don't have, I don't know,
perfect
studio
lighting, lights
shining down on you. And so it's going to be a little bit harder to make those things out. You know, we've all seen somebody trying to read something and they're doing like the thing with the glasses where they're bringing them up and putting them down and bringing them up, putting them down.
Or moving it far away.
Moving it far away and bringing it closer. Or you You know, a lot of our grandparents have a special, like, reading light that they have just wherever mm-hmm. it is that they set up to read. And these are all things that you might not have the ability to do when you're setting up for a board game. And so a possibly better way of handling that issue is to play a game that doesn't have that issue. And that is games potentially without reading in them.
Yeah.
So the last bullet point that we have for benefits to games that don't require reading is that usually those games are simpler. Those games are a lot easier to explain. Those games are a lot easier to play because there isn't a constant availability of a reminder, which is text on a card or on a tile or on a player aid or something like that. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's fewer edge cases where you're like, well, most of the time it works this way, but every once in a while, then we pull this card and do this thing.
Right. And the list of games that we chose, we didn't choose them necessarily as the best, although these are probably the best representatives that we like. But some of them we chose because they represent different aspects of what's so great about a game that doesn't necessarily require reading. But there are some things to remember in these games. They're not always super, super simple.
Yeah, no reading doesn't mean super simple, and it doesn't mean low strategy either. I mean, chess is a game.
Go is a game with no reading.
Go is a game with no reading. That doesn't make them simple games, but it makes them simpler to explain.
Right. Those are games with relatively simple rule sets.
Yes.
That are extremely complex. Right. So those are kind of the advantages, the benefits that we came up with to why you might select a game with no reading. Now let's talk about some games. So this is the thing we did. We actually picked the top five and stuck with it.
It is actually five.
Right. Now, if you head over to the show notes for this episode of the podcast, you will see more. And you're just going to list a couple other ones that...
Maybe. Make
you
love more.
That we came up with as we were going along, but we're just going to talk about five of them.
All right. Number one, we're not ranking these, but definitely our favorite game that does not require any reading whatsoever is Drop It.
Yeah. So this really shouldn't be a surprise. We talk about this game a lot. Drop It is a game from Cosmos. It has fantastic table presence. It came out in, I want to say, 2018. That sounds about right. But I don't understand how it didn't come out in, like, 1918. It's so simple. This is a game where you're dropping shapes made out of wood into a vertical board. And there's a small dexterity element to it, but ultimately you're trying to make sure that the shapes that you drop in don't touch any shapes that are the same shape or shapes that are the same color as the one that you're dropping in.
And then you get points. So technically you are reading the numbers on the side of the board, but generally speaking, numeracy, especially numbers less than 10, we figure are not really the same thing as reading.
So we love Drop It. It's inexpensive. You can find it on sale for under $20 in a lot of places. It's a great game for all ages. We highly recommend it. You can find the review at thefamilygamers.com.
The next game on our list is also one that is a quote-unquote grown-up game, but I love to play with younger kids, and that's King Domino.
Yeah, so King Domino from Blue Orange Games. There is a fair amount of arithmetic in King yes. Domino. So, again, this is a perfect example of something that isn't necessarily simple. There's lots of different ways that you can play the game. There's some variants that allow it to be more or less, I guess, complex. There's some expansions, which kind of change the rules a little bit. There's another expansion coming out this year. Did you know that?
I did.
Okay.
Maybe our listeners didn't.
Yeah, now they so know. That's fun. But that is King Domino. Really, really like this very simple tile laying game. Again, you're going to need to read numbers in this one, but the numbers are actually pretty big.
Yeah, the numbers are only on the back of the tiles, so at least one player needs to read those to order the tiles at the beginning of every round. But that's it. Actually placing and scoring, no reading at all.
Yeah, and nothing small. I mean, there is a little bit of, like, flavor art on some of the tiles, but it's very easy to discern them from each other. There will be no visual problems with this game.
Our next choice, another one where it's very easy to discern and the visual cues are strong, Draftosaurus.
Yep.
So, again, this is one that we have played a lot with younger kids, even though it's not really designed for them, because there's no reading and because the math is intuitive math. There are numbers on the board, but honestly, all you really need to know is in any particular part of the board, the numbers go up as you add more dinosaurs.
But there is, you know, math in this game. You are tallying points. So that's something to be mindful of. Very cute dinosaurs, lovely tactile experience with the drafting. Another game with expansions coming out this year.
Yay! And hopefully reprints as well. It's been hard to get.
Has it really?
Yeah.
So that is Draft Stores from Uncomma and Luma Imports. Another game that we really, really like. So we talked about the tactile experience with Draftosaurus, holding those dinosaurs. It's a different kind of experience from a game like King Domino, which is just placing tiles, or even Drop It, which is, you know, tactile, but they're not fun little shapes, right? The next game on our list is probably specifically on this list because of the tactile experience of the game and also the clinking together of marbles as you pull them out and you create explosions, and that is Potion Explosion.
Yeah, I really love Potion Explosion. This one is a little bit more challenging to keep in the no reading required category. There are lots of different kinds of potions, and although they are all very clearly indicated on the cardboard tiles, you're going to have to remember what all of them do, which either means a lot of practice or somebody who can read the rules and remind you.
Yeah, it's just a question of symbols. I mean, there's only like 8 of them, but it is a kind of a catalog that you've got to keep in your mind. So if you don't play the game a lot, it is going to be a little bit more difficult to do that. So Potion Explosion, a game from Horrible Guild and Simon, maybe?
At least when we got it, it was being done by Simon, yeah.
Yeah. And this is a game, again, with a few different expansions. They just released in the last year kind of a newer version of it with a plastic.
Yes, plastic dispenser.
Dispenser, woo! Which is better because the cardboard just gets beat up horribly. You are trying to accrue points by creating potions and using those potions to get more potions, basically.
Yeah, it's got a tiny, tiny bit of engine builder feel to it in that you can turn around and take a potion you just made and quote-unquote drink it to use it for its effect to help you complete even more potions. All right, we have one more. Let me tell you, folks, it was tough to narrow this down to 5, so please don't yell at me and be like, why didn't you include this?
Because, well, this is our list, okay? Yes. Again, we're going to cheat a little bit and put some more in the show notes for the show.
Yes.
We definitely, as we went through this, we were shocked to realize just how many games there were that didn't require reading. So it was actually brutally difficult to cut this list down. And this is our 5. We're going to share some of the community's thoughts on this as well. Yes. Maybe that'll get you off our backs.
Maybe.
So what is number 5 on our list?
The number 5 is Shobu. Again, this shouldn't be a huge surprise. We've waxed eloquent about how much we love this game. We did try to keep it as the only 2-player game. There were plenty more we could have chosen. But of the 2-player games we have, Shobu looks so classic. And it's definitely a game where once I played it once, I never had to look at the rules again unless there was a question. And I could explain to everybody without having to refer back at all. The rules are so simple, and that's one of the things I love, love about Shobu.
And it's one of those games where the rules kind of get you trapped. Where you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, I can't do that.
Yep.
So it's a very deeply strategic game. This game falls into that abstract strategy model where we did mention Chess and Go before. Mm-hmm. Those are considered abstract strategy games, perfect information games even. And this is the one that we really felt stood out in that hobby game context that we tried to live in.
Yeah. Again, there are more. They will probably be in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably our favorite in this category.
And I would even say, I mentioned we asked the community. We're going to talk about those games in a minute. I would even say head over to the Family Gamers community and engage in those topics, those conversations, because I think they're really good ones. This is a great thing where I don't think there is a right answer. And a lot of people have a lot of really, really good opinions about their favorite games that don't require reading. I think this is just a great place to accumulate a large amount of knowledge.
I think so, too. I am going to share a little bit of that knowledge with you, our listeners, now. Some of the recommendations we got within the Family Gamers community include Forbidden Island, I suppose that's true. Technically, there are place names, but the pictures are clear enough. You could figure out
each
place.
You don't really need the place names. I mean, they're there, but you don't really need them.
Azul. Set. Set, which has the benefit of your players don't need to be able to speak the same language. A true abstract strategy game that doesn't need that kind of back and forth communication to be able to play. Okay, Play. Paku Paku. Quirkle. We got a huge list from Nick as one can expect. But includes, you know, some of the Carcassonne family, Azul again, Sushi Roll, which I agree, of the Sushi Go family, Sushi Roll is the most non-reading friendly. Dice Heist, Cockroach Poker. Hey, Draftosaurus, there it is. Catacombs of Carrick, which technically has reading in it, but you can play it without. And Santorini. Then we've also got suggestions of Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters, Camel Up, and King Domino, and Rajas of the Ganges, which I have never played, and another vote for Draftosaurus. So that one came out a lot, as did King Domino. Well, you can add your favorites to the conversation if you go to the Family Gamers community. Easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community, or go to Facebook and search for The Family Gamers.
So that's going to be it for this topic. This is actually a shorter show for us compared to our recent shows, but that's okay.
I think.
So Anitra just mentioned where you can find the Family Gamers community. That is a great place to engage with not only us, but all of the members of the Family Gamers community. There's, what, 350 of us in there
Something like that.
There's other places, though. You can find us online. You can find the Family Gamers on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by going to @FamilyGamersAA.
If you've got a question for us, specifically, you can always email us.
That's right. You can email me, Andrew, @thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra @thefamilygamers.com.
You can check out our new Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise, t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and tote bags at thefamilygamers.com/merch, M-E-R-C-H.
We got some great leggings up there now with a cool meeple design on them.
Yeah, I did. Those. I put that up last week, I think. It is a cool, like, blue and white. It's the Falling Meeple design, but it's been reworked so that there's no Family Gamers logo. They just kind of look like cool meeples.
Yeah. They're real cool.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify.
The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers. And learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
All right. Thanks so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show.
I think that's going to be it for this week. I hope this was helpful and got your brain working on why you would choose non-reading games and maybe how you can incorporate some of these ideas the next time you sit down to play games with your kids.
All right. Sounds good. Next week, we have a very fun recurring guest for the show. And we've got some really cool stuff in the pipeline, so definitely stay tuned. But until then, until next week,
play games with your kids.